Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
This is episode 26, A Boarding School for Troubled Tax Structures.
And welcome back to Color Country Politics. We are taking a break from our candidate interviews, which I know you guys have loved. We've had a really good response from that. But there are other issues out there in the world that are affecting Iron County. And so we are so thrilled to have Senator Evan Vickers with us today. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm Jenny Hendricks.
I'm Jesse Harris.
And we've invited Senator Vickers today to talk about tax restructuring and equalization. There's a task force that is going across the state right now, sort of on a listening tour, trying to educate people as to, you know, what's happening. And we were so fortunate that Senator Vickers had a break in his schedule, and so we snagged him and brought him in. So this episode is completely devoted to tax restructuring and equalization.
Fair enough. Big title. Just dealing with taxes.
Exactly.
What you need is a real catchy acronym.
Yeah.
That's what's missing from this whole thing.
It is.
Okay. Well, anyway, thank you so much for coming in.
Hey, you bet.
So I think to start, can you just sort of take us briefly through why are we even having this conversation? Why is this an issue that we're talking about right now?
Sure. So the state is run on kind of a three-legged stool. You know, you hear that conversation quite a bit when they're talking about tax structure in the state. You have property tax, which primarily all goes to education, by the way, on the state level. And there's very little property. Most of that is done on a local level. That's administered on a local level. Then you have sales taxes, which is the primary source of funding for the general fund. So general fund, when you're thinking of general fund, you're thinking roads, you know, water, you know, those types of issues, law enforcement, those types of expenses. And then you have income tax. And income tax by constitution in the state of Utah, which, by the way, we're the only state that has that constitutional amendment that says all income tax goes to education.
That's interesting.
Goes to public education primarily. Now, it does go to higher education as well. There was another amendment passed about 10 years ago that allowed us to move money from public ed over to higher ed as well. So
because
on that income tax.
96, part. Actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a little longer than that. What that allows us to do is, and the best way I can tell people to visualize this is visualize a line, and that line is the Constitution. This side is income tax, which is dedicated to education, and this side is general fund. So it's primarily sales tax, but it can be fees as well. And those sources are dedicated. So if you're building roads and paying for law enforcement and those kind of things, it's over here. Agencies, that kind of thing. If you're doing education here. Now, we had the silo over here. It was actually on the general fund side, and that was higher ed. Back before 96, that was all paid for by general fund money, so sales tax. The constitutional amendment that was done in 96 allowed us to move some income tax fund money into this silo, take the money that was general fund or sales tax out and use it in these other areas. And what's happened over time is we've actually used up all the cap space. So now we don't have that luxury anymore. We have a little bit of room there, but not a lot.
Yeah.
So that started the, you know, the discussion about what can we do. We've been very fortunate in the state of Utah. We've had a robust economy. Things have gone well. We've had a lot of growth, especially on the income tax side. We've also had growth on the sales tax side. It hasn't grown as fast as the income tax side. Now, the state, with the economy growing, that means the population is growing as well. There are stresses and those kind of needs that are on both the general fund and the education side. Seems like we can never get enough money for education. We're always seem to be lagging, but we're doing our best. Although I will point out when we get to that point that we have given $1.5 billion, I mean with a B, $1.5 billion in new ongoing money to public education in the last 4 years.
Wow.
So that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And so that's where we're at now. So then realizing that what's happened is the stress on this side, you know, because if you look at the Wasatch Front, for example, with roads, mm-hmm. it's you just can't get around.
No.
You know, and we're going to continue to grow. We're continuing to, our economic development has been very successful, yeah. and we're seeing more success wanting to come to the state. It puts more pressure on the population. How do we deal with that? All that's just one factor.
Right.
But those are things that we just can't, we're not keeping up with on this side.
So why are we not keeping up on that side? What's the mechanism that causes us to have a shortfall over there?
Good question. You know, and most of the dialogue has been, and the studies show that our economy has changed somewhat, our spending patterns. You know, we mm-hmm. used to be a very substance-based, commodity-based purchasing community. Now we purchase either online or we purchase services. You know, we've changed some of those things. I mean, you're... Some of the classic ones, you know, well, a lot of people hire people to mow their lawns instead of going buying lawnmowers. You know, there's lots of different examples, but at the end of the day, we have moved from that. You know,
right.
music is one, you know.
That's my favorite yeah. one is music. Because yeah. depending on your generation, yeah. you know, you could start as far back, like, you know.
I remember 45s, 33 and the 3rds.
Did you used to buy 45s? Did you used to buy an 8-track? Did you used yeah. to buy a cassette? Did yeah. you used to buy a CD? Mm-hmm. Who does that anymore? Nobody. You stream yeah. it. And I even go back to in the business sphere, it was only a few years ago that I would go down to the office supply store and buy Microsoft Office, and you did that once a year. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a service that you pay for, and they just you know update it annually. And so I think when you put it kind of in that context, it makes a little more sense as to why the state is not receiving as much sales tax as it used to, and that line is going down.
We have made some inroads on the online sales tax. There's been some recent legislation. In fact, we passed additional legislation this year with the Wayfair bill that allowed smaller companies to use a Wayfair company that to collect their sales tax. Mm-hmm. For example, our store, Bullock Drug, you know, we've got shopbullockdrug.com now. Just recently, in the last 30 days, have started an online sales. We're using a tool like that to collect the sales tax, and that component will come into the state. Those are some challenges we've had. Let me just be clear. We do not have a money problem.
Okay.
We have a surplus. We've been very successful in our economic development, and our economy is growing, but it's growing like this.
Yeah.
If you look, in fact, we just got our year end numbers, and so when we budget, when we go through and budget items and allocate mm-hmm. money in the session, we do it on estimates, mm-hmm. and we do it on very conservative estimates. And that's why we typically have surplus, because we mm-hmm. estimate low. Well, we estimated low on the general fund side, and we missed it. We are actually down about $150 million. Now, we did build in some cushion to that, and our fiscal analysts will build cushion in. We actually underestimated how well we would do on income tax. So we have an additional surplus in income tax. We have a deficit in sales tax. So, you know, that's how things work out.
Yeah, yeah.
So why is it that the income tax is growing so much faster?
Well, primarily that is where we've had our growth. You know, when you're doing economic development, you're bringing jobs in, you're bringing equipment and all those things and those asset purchases. You know, that's driving money into the economy. People are making money. Mm-hmm. They're being mm-hmm. successful at it. That drives up that economy. Now, typically, you'll see an equivalent type of purchase on the general fund side. It just has been lagging, and primarily for some of the things, reasons we talked about.
Yeah. Well, if it's okay with you, because I hear a lot of stuff about, yeah. you know, why people are, you know, upset about the process. They, you know, they think that it is, you know, maybe an unfair or a not transparent process. So can we just kind of go through some of the things that are out there and maybe clarify some
sure.
of the issues? Okay,
yeah,
so
do my best to try.
So one of the things that I hear is there was a House bill last legislative session, HB 441, mm-hmm. that was essentially trying to figure out a way to tax services to kind of move that needle on the general fund side. And so I've heard people say, well, you know, this task force, all of this conversation, it's really just a cover to try and validate 441, and the legislature is just going to go straight back there. So is that the case? Is this just a rework of 441?
Not. You know, some bills go down in infamy. HB 441 will be one of those. SB 54.
Yeah,
SB 54. The Graham bill was one of them.
Yep, there you go. And fortunately, I forgot. It's been long enough ago, I forgot that number. But yeah, those, and so this bill, HB 441, what the genesis of that is, so remember last year we had our Speaker of our House and our Senate President both retiring.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
New leadership.
Yes.
I benefited from that because I'm now the majority leader in the Senate. But the Speaker, Brad Wilson, is really a sharp guy. Mm-hmm. He's very intelligent. He's a very successful businessman. He's a developer in the, up in the Davis County area. And he really could see coming in to that, and he was serving as the majority leader last year. He could see that we this problem developing.
Yeah.
So he felt like this is something we need to address. So, you know, you might think, well, okay, the House has just been out of front and this is all them. That's not true. The Senate has been working with the House, but the House took the lead. Mm-hmm. And so when you take the lead on a bill in the session, everything focuses over there. We did have people on the Senate side working with them, but it primarily is coming from that House. So they felt like that, and looking at it, and Speaker Wilson felt like that it would be a good opportunity to look at restructuring the taxes on services, going back to that discussion we had. So where do you go with that? Well, do you tax everything, or do you tax, you do hit and miss, you know, try to pick up the things that maybe were, like we discussed, music and things like that, and lawn care, some of those things, and do you, or do you go all out? Well, they decided to go all out and let's tax everything. And the whole concept was, let's lower the rate. You know, let's significantly lower the rate. And then, but we're going to put a tax on everything. So that means that things we're being taxed now on are going to be less. But there's an awful lot of things that we're not being taxed on. Real estate services, legal fees, you know, that was some things.
I promise really I'm not going to go off on real estate. We'll have that conversation another time.
And so then the process goes through as you start dealing with the bill. You start putting, not trying to put numbers to the paper. And here again, these numbers are all based on estimates, you know, and trying to get. And as the process goes through the session, now there was a lot of work done before the session, especially with the staff, you know, our fiscal analysts and our legal team trying to put together some language and some structure where that bill could go. But it's a process, you know, and the process was, and I told the Speaker, I said, you know, you were really successful with this bill. And he said, what do you mean? I said, you made everybody mad.
Across the board.
You did not leave anybody
Everybody. Everybody had their hair on fire. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just one of those things. I don't think I really don't think that was expected, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I think that they really felt like that they had the dialogue in their favor by lowering the rate. You know, because they were talking about going from 4.75 down to as low as 2.1 or 2.2. And at the end of the day, that didn't turn out. The bill that was being voted on in the House that my colleague, you know, Representative Shipp had to vote on was actually only lowering it down to about 3.5 or so.
Yeah, that's like low threes is kind of what I had heard.
Then over time, they were going to drop it some more.
Yeah.
But that was troublesome.
Yes.
And so at that point in time, you know, and on the Senate side, we were looking at it. And the other challenge is that in Utah, we've done a really good job of not taxing business inputs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you've got a product, you don't want to be taxed at every level.
Exactly.
You just want to tax the end product.
Yes.
And you want to allow businesses to have the ability to produce that product at the cheapest price, so that the cheapest price to the consumer, and then that's taxed.
Right.
And unfortunately, way 441 is at the time, it was taxing all levels.
Yeah.
And that was a real challenge.
And I think that's where a lot of people kind of got crossways with that bill. It could, because it does become so complex and so convoluted. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go to the real estate thing. You know, just it, so if you're taxing services in real estate, do you tax the home inspector? Do you tax, if you're talking about, you know, building a home, do you tax all of the individual components that go in there? When you start talking about the business inputs, you know, but then maybe carving out a credit on the other side. I think part of the issue was the complexity of the bill. Mm-hmm. It just got so big so fast. And I have to say that you guys really are not good at marketing.
Yeah.
You're really, really not good at marketing, because nobody was talking about the tax cut on the other side. Right. The only conversation happening was about our taxes are getting raised.
There's two or three actually tax cuts that were built into that bill. One was, you know, lowering the sales tax rate. Mm-hmm. One was also lowering the income tax rate. And then there was also some targeted income tax, you know, for Social Security.
Yeah.
And also restoring, you know, with the Trump tax law, the larger families, you mm-hmm. know, the child tax credit got out of whack. And we restored some of that during a special session, but we were going to restore the balance of that on the state level. And so those things, those were good things that never even got talked about because everybody focused on the bad. And, you know, it's interesting even today. And so follow up on that. So it was obviously apparent that we'd done a terrible job of marketing, that the bill was just was going to fail.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, at the point it was at, the Senate just wasn't going to be able to get there to pass that bill. And we just didn't have time enough to really work out all the kinks in it. So, okay, pause, and we're going to back up. And then we, and thus the tax reform, tax, I mean, don't use that word reform, tax equalization
and restructuring.
Task force was put together with some good people in place, and then that's what's going on now. They're going across the state and listening, and you know, I'm sure you're going to ask some questions about trying to validate 441.
So I'm glad for that history, and thank you for, you know, sort of bringing us here, because it is sort of a complex issue, and sometimes people say, well, why don't you just do this or why don't you just do that? So the history that got us here is HB 441. Basically exploded right at the end of this last legislative session.
Yeah, about 10 days before. Yeah.
So everybody said, let's just chill for a little bit. We need to gather more information. We need to have more communication. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Exactly. So, you know, and from the Senate side, we've assigned some senators through our leadership team. We've assigned some senators that have a lot of experience. With Lyle Hilliard.
Yeah.
He's been there 37 years. And he's been through a couple of different tax restructuring processes. Kurt Bramble's been there a long time. He's also been through two, you know, and when I say he's been involved, they've been there at the table trying to figure it out.
It was really interesting listening to their input at the task force in St. George. Although I did hear just a touch of cynicism. but very, very sincere people and very knowledgeable with a very deep experience in doing this.
Yeah, so essentially they're going around, and they had the one in St. George that was our local area, and that was well attended, probably the best attended that I knew of up to that point. I haven't talked to them since then, but a lot of input. They've allowed for they kind of created a structure to allow that meeting to flow and give people a minute and a half, and you know, and Pat Jones was the moderator of that
one. Oh, she was fabulous.
And she was very kind, you know, and if people tried to go over, she explained to them that, no, it's sorry.
Yeah. No, she was very, very good. Know? It was a very well-run meeting.
And so now what happens now? So we go back, we take all this information, we can take additional work that their fiscal analysts are doing, and they're constantly working on this, and go back. And then as Lyle Hilliard, I sat down with Lyle before we came back from when we were at Interim 2 weeks ago. And he says, everything's on the table. You know, people want to say that this is, and you'll hear this, that this is just a process to validate HB 441.
Right.
The legislature's just lying to us, that they're just going to go back and we're just going to pass 441. And I can tell you that's the farthest thing from the truth. Both the Senate and House leadership have come out and said, no, that is not the truth. Mm-hmm. That is not anything close to the truth.
Well, when you step on a landmine, you don't do anything.
And there's a lot of other choices. There's a lot of other easy choices. Essentially, what we've got is we don't have a money problem. We just got to move it around.
A structural problem.
Yeah.
So talk about what are some of the things that are on the table?
Could do.
Yeah. So for instance, why don't you just do a constitutional amendment to change that?
That's certainly an option. It's challenging in how you'd have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so The constitutional amendment is required to be on a general ballot to the public. And so we could do that. We could put it up. We've done it before. Mm-hmm. You know, we did it years and years ago. And when we created that, we did it in 96 when we modified mm-hmm. it. We could do it again to just do away with it. Now, how hard a sell would that be? I think it would be a hard sell.
Yeah.
Because I think education people would feel very uncomfortable in taking away that kind of safeguard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And doesn't mean that, the legislature wouldn't continue to fund education, because we
sure.
will.
Yeah.
But, you can't really bind future legislatures mm-hmm. either. It's not going to happen. So that's one option. Okay. You can look at how do we restructure sales tax within, or what pockets of money are there that you can backfill with income tax money and move it into the general fund. Mm-hmm. There's a number of those. One is there's $50 million right now and growing in reduced school lunch, free and school lunch, that comes from alcohol money. And it goes into education.
Okay.
That could be pulled back. That $50 million in growing money could be pulled back over here on the general fund side, and you could backfill that with income tax. That's one. We've taken the sales tax off of food a number of years ago. Most people don't realize that. When mm-hmm. you go to the grocery store, you do pay a lower tax than you do when you buy something at a convenience store mm-hmm. or something like that, or in everything else. You could restore that, that fee. And then also with that, then you always get the question, well, what about the low-income people?
Right.
How do you make it equitable for them? And it's very simple. We did do an analysis on this during the session. Everybody that makes $70,000 or less, you could give them a $50 per person direct income tax credit. And the family actually comes out ahead that way. And then you restore that money. So you're restoring to the low income with income tax.
Right.
You're taking the additional sales tax you generate and put it back into the general fund. That's one option.
And I think that's, from what I understand, that's considered a more stable source of income.
Yeah. And if you talk to people that have been there a long time, been doing budgets, in a lot of ways it was a disservice to the state when we took the sales tax off food, simply because it did destabilize that. If you look at time, especially in downturns, not in upturns, but in downturns, that stays pretty stable. Mm-hmm. But you get away from this. And when we had the sales tax on food built in, it took care of some of those valleys.
Yeah.
And so that's one option. Another option is that we do have a basic levy that comes from the state that then goes to the districts, mm-hmm. property tax levy, and that's a significant amount of money. That could be moved to the general fund, backfill out with income tax. Mm-hmm. That's an option with some of the surpluses we're getting in income tax. So. Mm-hmm. And there's one that the realtors came up with, the real estate, the general mm-hmm. fund, or what they call it, a service fee.
Yeah.
So every, assess a fee to a business, you pick the dollar amount, $300, $200, $400, and then give the exact same direct income tax credit on this side. So essentially all you did was move money from here to here.
And what I have, my understanding of that is, when you start talking about sales tax on services and the complexity of that tax collection, mm-hmm. not only is it a burden for small businesses to track it, report it,
right.
There's a lot of back-end work that would have to be added, but the state would have to add people mm-hmm. to process all of mm-hmm. that coming in. So if you create that sort of fee with a corresponding credit, we're already filling out our tax returns.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a one for one to move the money around without having to go through the constitutional amendment process, and it doesn't cost the state any additional personnel mm-hmm. because they're already processing the tax returns that come in anyway.
Yeah.
So
those are just a few options. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's others. So you can see that there are simpler options, mm-hmm. and I suspect that where we'll land is somewhere in that, with using some of those to move that around. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe some of the low-hanging fruit on the service side, some of the things that have really traditionally gone product to service, you know, maybe those will be brought in. But I don't think you're going to see any kind of large increase in the service tax.
Good. What do you think about, because we hear a lot, well, why doesn't the state just stop spending so much money? Are there places where we could cut expenses and kind of help solve this problem?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been very fortunate. We've been getting these surpluses. So what have we done with the surpluses? You know, that's a good question.
You got $1 billion. What do we do with it?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, last year, of course, this growth in education, you know, if you take in the population growth of education, and then to increase the weighted pupil unit, the WPU, which is the basic funding mechanism for public education every year, it takes somewhere around $300 to $350 million just to do that.
Wow.
So, and then if you did anything additional above, that's just keeping it stable.
Right.
Keeping it, you know, where it's at. And then if you do anything additional, of course, and we have, you know, then you put more money into it. So that's a lot of money.
Yes.
We have, for example, last year, we capped out the rainy day fund, you know, our education fund, education rainy day. We have two different rainy day funds.
Okay.
Actually, more than that, but two primary ones, both for a general fund and education.
Okay.
We capped those out.
Okay.
We took them to the max. We've actually put more money into a capital improvement fund that essentially is just a working rainy day fund.
Okay.
We used a lot of ongoing money for one-time expenses. So
okay.
Ongoing is money that you expect to get every year.
Sure.
One-time expenses. We built a lot of buildings last year and did things like that. There would not be, you know, so you can use the money if you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing you'd look in your family, you know, if you had some extra surplus, what am I going to do with it? So we socked a bunch away. We put a lot into savings and we spent some money on one-time things. So we were very prudent. Now, same token, I will tell you this, we do have a spending problem in the state. Every level of government has a spending problem. I think you can say that and not even flinch, because that's the case. Because what happens is you have an awful lot of people coming and asking for money.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of money that falls into that category. A lot of everybody wants, you know, thinks the state or the big brother should help us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite frankly, it's sometimes it's hard to say no.
Sure.
You know, we've had growth in Medicaid, you know, so Medicaid is a big expenditure on the general fund side. How do we keep up with that? You know, that's one of the proposals, is to do another constitutional amendment to allow to create another silo for Medicaid like we've done for higher ed.
I wanted to ask this question because the Medicaid expansion was a ballot initiative. So the voters said, yes, please spend more money on Medicaid. And so it looks to me from the outside looking in that it's kind of put the legislature in a tough spot, because now you're doing tax restructuring and equalization. But how do you square that with the wish for the majority of the taxpayers to expand Medicaid? Because that does come out of the general fund.
Good question. And in that referendum, there was a 0.15% increase in sales tax. People probably there again don't realize that, but they did vote for that to raise taxes. The problem is, you know, the cost based on the criteria in the bill, which is what it was this much, and the tax to fund it was this much.
Yeah.
You know, and so we passed legislation, which we had the authority to do with the referendum. We passed legislation to supersede that and bring that cap back down to what we can afford.
Okay.
So we are moving forward with Medicaid expansion, but it'll continue to go up just by the natural curve of Medicaid. It continues to take a bigger chunk of the budget up.
I didn't mean to get you off track there, but I'm curious. I've been curious as to how that squares where it was a ballot initiative and now we're talking about the budget. So thank you for that.
It's kind of the same problem you see in California. People will vote to spend money on something, but they won't vote for how to pay for it. Like, spend $3 billion on this train. Okay, what $3 billion? Don't care. Find it.
I don't know. Figure it out.
So one of the things we did, you know, with ballot initiatives, so we had two different ballot initiatives. We had multiple, but with two in particular. The one was Our Schools Now, which was asking people to pay more taxes for education. They were very clear up front that it was a tax. It was a vote for an increase in the gas tax. Then we had another bill was to increase to Medicaid expansion, but it was very unclear that there was a tax built into that, a tax increase built into it. Which one passed? The one that was hidden, or the one that was up front, did not pass.
Right.
So, you know, and so what we've required now, and Deidre Henderson actually ran the bill to Senator Henderson ran the bill to require that if you're going to put something on the ballot, it has to be clear and upfront whether there's a tax increase, how you're going to pay it.
I love that. Kind of thing. So, that's great. Yeah. That's great. So, again, I apologize, but continue your conversation about, you know, sort of what are the expenses, and you were talking about how everybody kind of wants a piece of the,
sure,
the pie.
Sure. So let me give you some examples. So every year, in this last couple of years, I've sat on a committee. In fact, Rex did as well, Senate Representative Schitt. It's called, we lovingly refer to it as BEDL. Business, Economic Development, and Labor.
Okay.
It's an appropriation committee where everybody comes that wants a chunk of money for arts, economic development pieces, Taylorsville Days.
Okay.
It's community celebration. Mm-hmm. Utah Summer Games.
Uh-huh.
Utah Shakespeare Festival.
Okay.
Tuacon Arts.
Some of these hit close to home then.
Yeah, so all those are things that come to that committee. We allocate a chunk of money for those.
Uh-huh.
And typically it goes through and the committee votes on where to prioritize those. But there's always other things that they go to their favorite member of leadership and say, look, you know, I'm from your district and we could really use $300,000 to get this museum going.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? Mm-hmm. You know, that legislator fights for that and he gets $300,000. There it is. Well, those are things when you start seeing, if you're going to really criticize spending in the state, that's where I would go.
Yeah.
That's the list I would go to.
Yeah.
And because there's times I still shake my head and say, how did we fund that? And I won't give you any specific examples, but there was one in particular organization that received over $1.5 million a year. It's a private for-profit entity.
Wow.
And they got money, you know, every year. And the reason of it is because the legislator lived in their district was in House leadership.
Uh-huh.
And there's other examples of that.
Uh-huh.
And so if I was going to criticize the state, that's where I'd go.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's a very small portion of the overall budget.
Sure.
Now, is there areas to cut? Yeah, there is. Because my first year in the legislature was 2009. And that's when the bottom had fallen out.
Yeah.
And so it was like our welcome was, welcome to the legislature. We're going to cut 10% out of the budget.
Oh, man.
And, yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you. The first, you know, 6 to 10% in most areas wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
So, and I think we're there again.
Sure.
I think we're there again. I think we could do that. But at the same token, you have to keep up with competitive salaries.
Yeah.
You know, especially in law enforcement and some of those things, you're constantly hearing where we lose them to this city or
we train them
and then we send
off our trained people.
And yeah, exactly. You know, so there's, and over history, government has typically had better benefit packages.
Sure.
And so that's attracted people, not necessarily for the salary, but the long-term economic benefit. Well, over time, those having to restructure the costs of those benefit packages, those have come back closer to the private market.
Yeah.
Still under, as a whole, general rule, government, especially state government, retirement packages and benefit packages are still better than you see at other levels.
Yeah. But,
so those are some challenges that you face with how do you allocate that money with the budget.
Right. Very interesting. Do you have any? You look like you're done.
Yeah, I've heard the criticism that the amount of tax receipts has grown far in excess of population growth plus inflation. And so the question is, well, what do we need to restructure anything for? We just need to start cutting taxes because obviously there's just too much money coming in. There's no reason we need to spend more than population plus inflation. Where's that land?
We definitely feel that we have room to cut the income tax. You know, even with restructuring and moving income tax money over here to free up general fund money on this side, we still have room to cut the income tax. You know, we're at 4.95 right now. We could go to 4.7, 4.75, and without a lot of heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one area we can do it. Now, on the sales tax side, it's a little more tricky. You know, and it was interesting because last year, before the session, as we started the session, really, the governor came out and said, we're going to do a $200 million tax cut in sales tax. And he said that in the same sentence saying that our problem was with sales tax.
Right.
And so we're sitting back saying, what are you saying, governor?
Excuse me.
probably confused a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, why do we need to, if the problem is we have too much money, then why do we need to create what looks to me to be a new tax?
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of things, and there's a lot of confusion. You get factions. You get people that are fired up one direction. We get people that are really, really sensitive and fired up and advocating a Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
You know, they want big full-time Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to bring all this federal money in. It's going to save the world. And you know, when you put pencil to paper, it usually doesn't.
Sure.
You know, and then you have other groups that you want to just cut taxes, you know, to the bare bones, and that's going to, you know, fix everything. Well, you put pencil to paper, no, that doesn't work, you know.
Yeah.
So the challenge for us is, especially those of us in leadership, is, okay, how do we find that right, that good balance?
You know,
how do we find that correct mode that allows people to, and the president has said, this president of the Senate, President Adams, you know, he specifically said, we have been very fortunate in Utah. If you look over our careers, meaning mine and his and others like us, in the last 20 to 30 years, we've been very fortunate because there's been a tax structure in place that allows us for upward mobility, meaning that we can, if we put money and hard work into it, we can benefit.
Yep.
And he said, I'm very concerned right now because our young entrepreneurs are telling us the current structure doesn't necessarily give them that same benefit that we have. And so he said, my goal with this whole restructuring and equalization process is, number one, that we have a system that allows our young entrepreneurs and our young people that are working hard and putting effort in to have the same upward mobility opportunities that we have.
That's great.
We definitely want to see more domos and plural sites in our state, those massive unicorns.
Yeah.
You know, and it changes. You know, it may have been, you know, brick and mortar, and back, you know, 30 years ago. Today, it's something completely different. You know, you get software. Who knows what it's going to be in 20 years?
Right.
You know, it's going to be, some things will stay the same. Everybody's going to buy and sell a house, I guess. So you're safe.
Got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
And hopefully everybody buys prescriptions.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, that, you know, those are some challenges, but it's always interesting when you get into this and if you take a big pause and step back and listen, you know, you got, you know, the chirping going on over here, you have the chirping here, and give me more.
Right.
And nobody ever says give me less.
Right.
So,
exactly. Yeah. That's great. Well, we don't want to keep you for too long. Do you have anything else to jump in there with? This is like drinking from a fire hose when you start talking about budgeting and tax restructuring, and there's just, it's a complex process. And one, like you just said, that there's a lot of interested people and a lot of people who are paying attention and are invested in a successful outcome of this.
I will say that, you know, so I've been there, this is my 11th year in the legislature. I started out in the House. And like I said, I started out in the House when we were just cut.
Yeah.
You know, everything. And the first 2 years, all we did was cut. And it was very, very painful.
Sure.
Then the economy started to turn around. You know, I moved to the Senate and had an opportunity to see things start to improve. And then the last 2 years, last year I was involved in leadership as the vice chair of executive appropriations. So I was the one that was helping structure the budget.
Right.
So I saw firsthand how things are done and some of the, you know, the good and the bad that we are facing then. And then this year, being in leadership role seeing that it's interesting, but over 11 years, we've seen some pretty good cycles, although it's been primarily an upward cycle, but there's been some hills and valleys in there as well.
Yeah.
The big discussion back in 09 and 10 was how difficult it was to balance the budget without the sales tax on food.
Yeah, okay.
You know, back then it was really, really difficult. But the economy has significantly grown. The budget has significantly grown. A lot of that still is federal money passing through, but it's still grown significantly.
So the federal money is starting to account for a large portion of that increase in state spending then?
Yeah, it has. But I guess as a percent, it's stayed pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
But as dollar-wise, it's gone up as well.
Yeah.
More people, more services, especially on the Medicaid side, brings more money in.
Yeah.
And education, there's some that kind of flow. There's a significant amount of federal money flows through education.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, anything else that you want to communicate to your constituents out there?
So number one is we really do appreciate the input. You know, and I get all sorts of messages. I get messages from, you know, and this is Lyle Hilliard's little statement. He says, don't tax me or thee, tax the guy behind the tree. So we get a lot of those types of messages, you know, please don't tax me. And I'm still getting messages, you know, from especially from attorneys, realtors and other people like that, that feel like 441 is going to be the benchmark and that's what we're going to do. That's not the case.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to say, don't worry about it, but you don't have to worry about it as much as you did a few months ago.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And so we appreciate that input. We appreciate people trying to get educated on it. And as I've talked to people, the more I talk to people, they say, oh, yeah, I didn't get that. Yeah, I didn't understand that. So I really appreciate you doing the podcast. Hopefully it's beneficial to people who listen to it.
Yeah. And if you want more information, there's the task force has actually put together a really cool sort of educational piece at le.utah.gov. Or you can just Google tax restructured and equalization in Utah, and it'll come right up. And it talks about, you know, sort of what Senator Vickers has explained. Why are we here? You know, what is the issue? And then it sort of takes you some of the potential, you know, solutions and stuff. So it's interesting if you have time to go check it out.
Yeah.
But we sure appreciate your time.
Hey,
thank you.
And I appreciate that I'm not the one having to do this.
We're glad we're on this side of the microphone, not that side of the mic.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Hmm. This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.